No, I'm great. Thank you so much. And you?
I know I'm good. I'm good. I'm good.
Morning, Che. How are you doing?
How are you, Honorable Breidenbach?
I'm fine, thanks. Are you well?
No, I'm okay. I'm okay, thanks.
Good, good, good.
So, we are left with 1 minute. Is the first organization on the virtual platform?
It's right here.
Okay, the African Police and Civilian Oversight Forum. You are here.
It's right here, Chair.
Thank you very much. Then the Media Monitoring Africa.
Recording in progress.
Are you on the platform? Consortium for Refugees and Migrants in South Africa.
Good morning, Chair. I'm here, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Association of Christian Media.
Morning, Chair.
Morning, morning.
Yes, Chair. No, no, Chair. It's here.
Okay.
I was trying to call most of the presenters today, Chair. I've managed to speak to the presenter. They will be joining soon, Chairperson.
Okay.
So I was trying to make them to alert presenters to join all of them and monitor the proceedings.
Okay. And then campaign for free expression. They ask the forum. Okay. Please, just monitor them so that we alert us if others have joined. Honorable Breidenbach.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Before we start, may I just apologize on behalf of Honorable Horn. He's not available this morning. He has other matters to attend to.
Okay, no problem. No problem. Thank you very much. Honorable Swart.
Good morning, Chair. Morning, colleagues. I have the WIPS meeting this morning, so my apologies to the presenters. I will need to leave for that. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Your apology is accepted. Can we start, honorable members, and to everybody on the virtual platform and those who are listening or watching from home. Today is the last day of presentation of public hearings on the hate crime, hate speech. We have six organizations that will be making their presentations. We will start now with the the first one. I just spoke to them. The African Policing, the African Policing Civilian Oversight Forum. Thank you very much. Thank you, Isia.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, for inviting us and for having us. And good morning to honorable members and colleagues from civil society. My name is Themba Masuku. I'm going to be representing this morning the African Policing Civilian Oversight Forum, and we're going to be making our oral submission that was also informed by the written submission that we've already submitted to the Portfolio Committee. I'm going to share my screen and then proceed with my presentation.
Yes, you know that you've got 20 minutes.
I will try to stick to the time as much as I can, Chair. Okay. Slightly. Chair, can you confirm if you can see my presentation?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Just need to figure out how this thing works, how this thing moves. Okay, right. Yes, as I've said, my name is Themba Masu. I'm going to be making this presentation with my colleague, Louise Edwards, who's also going to assist with dealing with any questions that members may have. So welcome this opportunity, a great deal, to make an oral submission on the on this very important bill. As I've already said, our submission is based really on our current research and technical support that we continue to provide to state organs of state. We do work very closely with the South African Police Services and Department of Justice. And part of what we provide in terms of technical support is to really improve the prevention and detection and investigation of xenophobic violence and related hate crimes, and to promote the implementation of the National Action Plan to combat racism, racial discrimination, xenophobia, and related intolerances. A very important framework that our government has produced in dealing with this problem of hate crimes. And also encouraged by government's commitment, we're really encouraged by what we see government doing around this bill to address hate crimes and hate speech. And our view is that the proposed legislation is really at the cutting edge of dealing with this problem, because we think it's going to address a variety of concerns, and particularly concerns around data collection regarding hate crimes. Very, very little is known in terms of the extent of the problem. And we think that at the center of this bill is that gathering of evidence that will assist in tailoring interventions that are evidence-led. When implemented, we think that this legislation is aligned with evidence-led interventions to address hate crimes, resource allocation, deployment of the police to prevent, detect, and investigate these crimes. So we think that from an evidence point of view, this bill really puts us in a very good position to begin to match our interventions with the resources and the deployment of assets. And the role of the police here, Chair, is going to be very important. And I want to amplify a little bit exactly what our submission actually entails in this regard. We regard the role of the police as critical. Police will require support, particularly to translate and operationalize this legislation so that it is able to achieve its intended purpose. A significant investment would be required by SAPS to ensure capacity, for example, to properly identify and investigate crimes that are identified in this bill, particularly in Section 3 and Section 4. But also to ensure proper data collection and reporting of hate crimes in their system, the CAS system. Provide appropriate support and care to complainants and victims of these complex crimes during investigations. This was an issue that was raised by other submissions yesterday, and I think it's a very important thing that appropriate support and care, particularly to complainants and victims, is provided in the implementation of this bill. But also to establish specialized capacity to investigate, combat, and prevent hate crimes. We think that are consistent with investigations of other complex crimes like sexual offences, that this will require kind of specialized capacity, so that police are able to properly investigate, combat, and prevent these hate crimes. Our view is that this will require significant investment, which will also require developing directives in-house, training of investigators, and I will amplify this point a little bit later. The role of the police, again, just in terms of resources, while the resources will be required for such as part of the costing of the bill, there are elements in the bill that can be amended to fully support the role of SAPS. And these include, for example, our view is that when we look at the preamble of the bill, it can be reinforced by anchoring it on the constitutional guarantees to inclusiveness and non-discrimination by including the constitutional provision that South Africa belongs to all who live in it, united in our diversity. And I think that's a very strong statement if it is carried into this bill. But also making specific reference to South Africa's regional human rights commitments and obligations, which provide for the treatment of non-nationals, amending, for example, Section 2A to read as follows, as contemplated in regional and international law instrument. We think that that insertion of an acknowledgement of that particular regional instrument does in itself strengthen and acknowledges our own obligations as a country to regional human rights obligations. And also because our view, Chair, is that African migrants as well are over, when it comes to hate crimes and hate speech, are disproportionately kind of victims here. And I think drawing into this regional kind of human rights instruments does in itself strengthen our own position and our own standing in terms of commitment to dealing with this problem of hate crime. But also including additional procedural safeguards in the taking of victim impact statement. And I'll amplify again this issue. And again, we think that the inclusion in Section 363 of a sentencing option that includes community service and restorative justice process, in recognition that custodial sentence or fines are not always an effective means of achieving justice, rehabilitation of offenders, repairing the harm caused by the crime, or promoting social justice. We think this is very important, the options that include community service and restorative justice processes, which are also part of our criminal justice processes, should be also be included as an option in terms of sentencing. Referencing Section 8 to a duty on the National Commission of Police to include reporting on the implementation of the Act in the sub-annual report. We think this is very important. It should be obligatory that the National Commissioner is compelled in this Act already that there need to be an annual reporting regarding hate crimes and hate speech. But also broadening the scope of Section 9 regarding the prevention of hate crimes and hate speech to include measures to address the broader societal and environmental factors that can lead to hate crimes and hate speech. This includes in particular the establishment of a prevention framework that promotes interventions to address risk and challenges at an individual, relationship, community, societal level to address risk and challenges leading to hate crimes and hate speech. We think this will be very important because some of the factors that actually perpetuate hate crime and hate speech are located in the environment, and we think that the Act itself can actually assist in kind of preventing these kind of hate crimes from proactive point of view. But on the issue of victim impact statement, we support the express provision for a victim impact statement. I think we think this is consistent with what we see in many acts that have been developed in this country. And we echo the Law Society of South Africa's position, which correctly suggests that the victim impact statement is a useful tool in proving new information to the court regarding physical, psychological, social, and financial impact of the victim. In this way, the voices of victims are enhanced in the criminal justice system, and I think this is very important. And already, like I've said, this position is consistent with the President in the Child Justice Act and in the Criminal Law Sexual Offences Related Matters Amendment Act 32 of 2007, and also consistent as well with the Victim Charter, which encourages that the voices of victims must be heard in the criminal justice process. When it regards to the penalties, Section 6.3 A and B of the draft bill prescribes the sentence for any person convicted in terms of Section 4. APCOF recommends that the bill be amended to include the prescribed sentencing option of community service and restorative justice process. I think I've already made the point. Perhaps I can just, for the purpose of time, leave this slide. But when it comes to directives, welcome the provision for directive involving the NDPP to consult with the DG of Justice and Correctional Services and SAPS National Commissioner. However, we recommend the committee to consider the amendment to Section 7 to provide a specific and time-bound directive to the National Commission of Police for the measures required to achieve full and effective implementation of the law. I think we think that leaving it blankly as a statement may not be acted upon, and that we think a specific and time-bound directive is very important to get things done. We recommend that these consultations and issuance of these directives should not exceed 90 days of the promulgation of this act. And that we think that concession and issuance of this directive is very important, that it must be time-bound. Section 7 should also include the provision for the issuance of directives in the form of standing orders and national instructions by the South African National Commissioner. We think that is very important, so that the standing orders and national instructions are developed within the South African Police Services for members to act upon. The integral role of the SAPS to the successful implementation of this law is very important, can never underestimate it. SAPS are at the center of it. The issuance of adequate training and prosecutors should also be provided for in the Act, Chair, and we think that is very important to ensure that hate crimes are properly investigated and properly prosecuted, but in a manner that carries with it the principles of Ubuntu. In this regard, we recommend that Section 7 should include the provision that the NPA and SAPS should develop provide training for all its members within a period not exceeding 12 months of the Ensuring Act. And we think that is very important, so that there is an alignment between what the Act is intended to and the timber of prosecutors and police officers who should be capacitated and trained to successfully implement this law. So, in terms of the amendment that we suggest, Chair, to address our concerns, we recommend that the current Section 7 be amended to be Section 7.1, and that the following text is added as new subsections to that section. So Section 7.2 would be training for prosecutors, and it will read as National Director of Public Prosecutions must develop relevant training courses with reference to the directives in subsection 1, and to ensure adequate training takes place within the National Prosecution Authority. This we think is very important.
Yeah, left in 5 minutes.
I'm almost done, Chair. 7.3, the National Commissioner of Southern Police Services must, within 90 days of the promulgation of the Act and in consultation with the Minister of Police and the National Director of Public Prosecution, issue national instructions regarding all matters which are reasonable, necessary, and expedient to be provided for in relation to the Act, and which must be followed by all police members, including the following. The manner in which cases are relating to hate crime and hate speech are to be dealt with, including procedures, specific investigating procedures, and the treatment of complaints, and the collection, analysis, and publication of information. We think those three issues in the national instructions must be provided for, and the committee should be able to monitor the development of these national instructions. 7.4, we recommend that the National Commissioner must develop a training courses with reference to the national instructions subsection 3, and ensure that adequate training takes place within the South African Police Services, with relevant training provided to all members of the detective services within a period of 12 months from the promulgation of this bill. We think that will be very important if that is monitored, that it takes place. And again, when it comes to reporting on the implementation of the Act, we welcome the provision in Section 8, which puts the ultimate responsibility of data collection and reporting on the implementation of the Act to the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services. We think that is consistent with international practices. Therefore, we recommend that Section 8 be amended to specifically require the Minister of Justice, the SAPS, and the NPA to publish such data in their respective annual reports. And in conclusion, Chair, we really want to thank the Department of Justice for the current iteration of this bill. We are grateful for the commitment shown and the work already undertaken in strengthening the bill. We encourage the committee to maintain its oversight of the implementation of this law, particularly as it pertains to its effectiveness in combating hate crime and hate speech by the criminal justice institution. Our post-democratic mantra, never again, continues to elude us. And this bill gives hope to many victims of hate crime and hate speech, and a clear signal of indeed, never again. More information is available in our written submission to this committee. We thank the Chair and Honourable Members who can take questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Masuku, for the presentation. Members, that is the presentation from Mr. Masuku. I have the following members who would want to ask questions or make comments. Honourable Kolangola, Honourable Dr. Nibot Drachand, Honourable Stephen Swart, in that order. Honourable Ngola.
Thanks, Chair. You know, Chair, when you see that kind of a background from the presenter, you start getting impression that, you know what, given those books at the back, it means there is going to be a very impressive conversation. That's on a lighter note, Chair. Chair, my question is one, and it's a general question. We all know Section 16 of the Constitution, the freedom of expression, which is affectionately understood as the freedom of speech. Now, how do you suggest that in this bill, we strike the balance between the freedom of speech and the hate speech? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mola. Honorable Nibot Drachand.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to everyone on the platform. Good morning. I'm Womani Drachand. I'm a member of this committee. The person's voice that you are hearing is not my voice. That is the voice of my sign language interpreter because I'm using South African Sign Language. I don't have a specific question regarding the submission, but can you just give us a little bit of background to your organization, the African Police Monitoring Civilian Oversight Forum? Who are you? Who are your members? And I'm curious, do you also provide assistance to SAPS? Do you provide any training to SAPS? So I just wanted to know a little bit more about your organization. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Dr. Nibot Drachand. Honorable Stephen Swart.
Yes, thank you, Chair, and good morning to Mr. Masuk, and thank you for your presentation. It's very impressive. I just wanted to add to what the Honorable Scholar has said about the Balancing Act, and maybe in your response you would look at particularly Section 4, to A, B, C, and D, where there is an attempt to create certain exemptions in striking that balance, and then read with Section 16.1 and Section 2 of the Constitution. And given your obvious academic background, you might want to allude to that in a written additional, if the committee permits, to how to strike that balance, and whether that is exemptions set out in Section also like to particularly ask you if, given your reference to the challenges that on the implementation side of the bill, and that is where you make specific reference correctly that a significant investment will be required by the SAPS to ensure capacity, firstly, to properly identify and investigate crimes, hate crimes, ensure data collection, and provide appropriate support and care, and the establishment of specialized capacity. Now, when we look at the bill, page 17, on the financial implications, it indicates that no additional funding is being sought to implement the bill. Do you think that this is not correctly costed, or given what you already say, or is it your view that additional funding will be required to implement the bill? Thank you so much. Jeff.
Thank you very much, Honorable Swart. Over to you, Mr. Masuku.
Thank you very much, honorable members, for the questions. As I indicated at the beginning of my presentation, I am co-presenting this with my colleague, Luis Edwards, who is also going to answer some of these questions. So I'll deal with some of the questions, and I'll defer some of the more difficult questions to have to deal with. But just to start with the question from Honorable Swart. The costing of the bill, we think that is very important to ensure that this bill achieves its intended purpose. The issue of costing would be very critical. So the issues that we've already flagged as critical in the implementation of this bill, we are unsure whether already that has been considered, because there's going to be a lot of changes that will require within, for example, the criminal justice institution. The police will need to reposition themselves to make sure that they're able to successfully implement. And that will require training. Training on the bill itself, so that those this particular section, those crimes in section 3 and section 4 are properly understood by police officers. So there must never be litigation that comes after, because police have not been able to properly understand exactly what is meant in the bill or in the act by those crimes. So we think that the issue of costing and additional funding would be very important. I mean, other organizations already yesterday, which I think we agree with, will require also additional resources at police station level. Victims of hate crime and hate, may require a special kind of treatment, as opposed to going to this to the service centers and being treated in a kind of open area, that there are resources that are deployed to make sure that their dignity and their privacy is dealt with as and when they report these crimes. So that's a bit of a background about the organization, which I'm sure my colleague Luis Edwards will also expand on. We're a Pan-African organization. We're based in Cape Town, though I'm actually still working from my home in Johannesburg. But it's an organization that works more broadly in the region, assisting, providing technical support to key state institutions around their oversight and the strengthening democratic policing. We do work with the South African Police Services very closely. Right now we are on a project that we're doing on anti-xenophobia. We will be rolling out a training specifically capacitating police officers around understanding the immigration law in terms of policing of non-nationals. But we think that is very important, that in as much as police have a right to stop and search, but they do that with a clear understanding of what the law requires of them. So we are rolling out this are training throughout nine provinces, training police officers on the immigration kind of law and processes and some of the challenges that migrants face in this country. I'll defer some of the questions to my colleague, Louise Edwards.
Thank you, Themba. Thank you, Chairperson. Just to briefly respond in terms of two issues, in terms of who APCOF is, just to supplement Temba's explanation is that we've been around for about 18 years, and our method of work is to promote the establishment of civilian oversight of the police. And we started off as a very strong base in South Africa because of the establishment of IPED, and we were able to look at the ways in which its establishment had impacts on policing and to use that as a template for a Pan-African response to issues of police accountability. And we've also worked in relation to custody management in South Africa directly with SAPS. But we also provide direct technical assistance to those mechanisms which are charged with the oversight of SAPS. So we do a lot of work with the Human Rights Commission and the new National Preventive Mechanism, a lot of work with IPED and historically with the Civilian Secretariat as well as your own committee. In terms of this issue of hate speech, it has always been APCOF's position that the Hate Crimes Bill shouldn't actually deal with this issue of hate speech. So it's not a direct response to the question in terms of the exemptions. I noted the offer for potentially for additional written submissions on the issue, and we would certainly take that up. But our position to this point has always been that from a practical level and a constitutional level, we think that it's going to cause confusion and that there already are existing mechanisms, as you've heard submissions on before, to deal with to deal with hate speech. And that does include the criminal charge of crimen injuria, and there's the issues around the promotion of equality and the prevention of unfair discrimination act, etc. And we think that in terms of the costing, etc., that additional support and implementation support should be provided in terms of what exists in the law currently to regulate hate speech, and that we shouldn't be creating a new mechanism to deal with that. But we would be open to providing additional consideration on this point, given that it does diverge that the specific question from what has been our position up to date. And I think that deals with the remaining issues. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Temba.
Thank you very much, Ms. Edwards. Thank you very much. Let's invite the next organization, Media Monitoring Africa. Are they on the platform?
Yes, Chair. They're on the platform.
Thank you very much. Honorable Ngola, can you lower your hand? Thank you very much. It's up again. Thank you. Media Monitoring Africa, can you start?
They seem to be muted, Chair. I don't know, maybe it's issues of network. They can hear you, I'm quite sure.
Can you go to the next organization?
Hi, good morning, Chair and honorable members. Sorry about that. We're just dealing with some technical difficulties. My name is Tandi Smith, and I will be presenting for Media Monitoring Africa. I'll be joined by a colleague, Advocate Ben Winks, who will be co-presenting with me, and just waiting to see if he is on the call. I do believe he will be joining any second now, but I'm happy to go ahead and start presenting.
Yes, can you proceed? You have 20 minutes.
Thank you very much. Let me just share my screen. All right, is that clearly visible?
Yes, it is.
All right. Thank you very much. All right. Okay, thank you. As I mentioned, my name is Tandi Smith. I'm Head of Programs at Media Monitoring Africa. And just to give you an idea of how we'll structure the presentation this morning, I will be giving a brief overview of our approach to the submission, as well as just MMA MMA generally. We'll then go on to highlight some of the key points that we make in our submissions around the provisions of hate speech, as well as the offense of hate crimes. We'll then touch on some of the other provisions and recommendations that we feel the committee should be, the attention of the committee should be brought to, and then we will conclude. Just to give a little bit of a background into Media Monitoring Africa, we are a nonprofit organization based in Johannesburg, and we've been in operation since 1993. We were established to monitor the coverage of our first democratic elections. And since then, we have grown into a fairly medium-sized organization that monitors, continue to monitor a range of human rights-based issues in our media using civil technology and that scope of media monitoring has broadened into dealing with a range of policy related issues where we deal with a number of challenges dealing with information rights, rights to privacy, right to freedom of expression, access to information, and through that our approach has always been based around a constitutional based around our constitutional mandate. Our goal of the organization, as the organization, is promoting a free, fair, ethical, and critical media culture, which will promote and enable a just and fair society. Through our work over the years, we've engaged in a range of legislative, litigious, and advocacy processes that deal with these issues, and that's why we have a keen interest in this particular bill that deals with hate speech and hate crimes. Right. I've just been alerted that my colleague, Advocate Ben Winks, has joined the session. Just in dealing with our approach to the submission, or to the bill, one of the key issues that we would like to highlight is the appropriate balance that needs to be struck between the issues of freedom of expression and other competing rights and interests. That has come across in a number of our policy submissions dealing with a range of issues, and it's the same approach that we take with our submission to this particular bill. Just to reiterate, we have been an active participant in the process up until now, providing submissions to the very first iteration of the bill. And I think something that we wanted to particularly highlight is through our work, we do a lot of work with children and amplifying the voices of children. And we have a particular project where children actually provide their own views and submissions on particular bills and or policy submissions. And this particular bill had a submission from a group of children that we worked with from our Empowering Children and the Media project. And just to reiterate again, the point that we focus on promoting the constitutional rights and relating to this bill particularly is of course the freedom of expression as well as access to information. Another point that we wanted to highlight, some key areas of work that we do on a very practical level in terms of hate speech. We, in partnership with the IEC and a number of other organizations, have built the system, the Real 411, which deals with real complaints submitted by members of the public, members of the public to address issues of hate speech online. And one of the key points here is that we have partnered with the South African Human Rights Commission in approaches on dealing with hate speech online. And again, this is particularly in line with trying to strike that very difficult balance between the right to freedom of expression and managing and tackling harmful content that is disseminated across various online platforms. And with that, I would like to hand over to my colleague, Ben Winks, to take us through the provisions on hate speech and hate crimes.
Thank you very much to my colleague, Ms. Smith, and thank you, Chair and committee members, for giving us this opportunity. It may be useful to recall a brief background to the bill, which was originally called for by civil society groups to address hate crimes in particular. That is, you know, common crimes that are committed with a hateful motive, which cry out for some kind of additional firm response by the criminal justice system. And the reason they cry out for that response is because while any crime has an impact on the immediate victim and perhaps the immediate community, like a murder, an assault, malicious injury to property, arson, a hate crime has a much wider impact. It strikes a shockwave across the country in many cases, where it strikes at the dignity, the human dignity of an entire group of people based on their group identity. So a homophobic murder or a corrective rape affects not only the immediate victim and community, affecting their sense of individual safety like any other violent crime, but strikes at the dignity and the right to equal human worth of all queer people across the country. And the same goes for racially motivated hate crimes, crimes committed motivated by a person's albinism or some other disability. So the need, the pressing need for specific hate crimes legislation was urgent already in the 1990s when this legislation was first contemplated. It's now taken over 20 years for the legislation to get to this point. And one of the reasons for that, as the committee will know, is because the drafters saw fit to couple the hate crimes provisions with a chapter on hate speech. Now, speech is a much more contested terrain. You have a conflict between the right to freedom of expression on the one hand, and the rights to human dignity and equality on the other, which hate speech provisions aim to protect and vindicate. One of the reasons why the legislation has taken so long is because there have been challenges to the existing civil hate speech legislation, Section 10 of the Promotion of Equality and Prevention of Unfair Discrimination Act, which were resolved finally with the Constitutional Court's judgment in South African Human Rights Committee versus Gwelane. Now, that should never have been the case, we comment in passing, because that held up the hate crimes legislation unnecessarily. Because the hate speech chapter, as the committee knows and as the department knows, was always going to be subject to a constitutional challenge. There are many groups in South Africa which, you know, I would regard as falling on the side of almost free speech absolutists or free speech fundamentalists, which are destined to challenge any hate speech legislation, however progressively motivated or however carefully crafted. And obviously the committee is going to be alive to that possibility and is going to approach the hate speech chapter with considerable care in order to insulate it from any potential constitutional challenge. Now, as my colleague has said, Media Monitoring Africa is not a group of free speech absolutists or fundamentalists, certainly not. What we seek to do is to strike the appropriate balance between freedom of expression on the one hand and dignity and equality on the other. Now, regrettably, the current formulation, as we assess it, will be subject to a successful constitutional challenge. It will not pass constitutional scrutiny, and the reasons are as follows. If I can just ask Tani to move to the next slide. The first problem is that hate speech is already prohibited under civil law. And one of the key things that is assessed by a court when there is a constitutional challenge on the basis of an infringement of a right or a limitation of a right is whether the limitation is proportionate. In other words, whether it is excessive or not. Now, internationally and in some of our neighboring countries, there have been judgments concerning the criminalization of defamation, which was inherited from colonial law, where defamation was not only a civil wrong, but also a criminal wrong. And internationally, the African Commission on Human and People's Rights has called for the criminal defamation offense to be repealed. And many of our neighboring countries have struck down the offense of criminal defamation as unconstitutional. And the reason they have done that is because it is excessive, because there is already a civil remedy for that violation of a person's right to dignity and reputation. Now, the same logic will apply to the criminalization of hate speech, especially if it uses the same language as the civil prohibition. That the existence of the civil prohibition and civil remedies in the Equality Court will render the criminal prohibition excessive, an excessive limitation of the right to freedom of expression. So, that is our first concern, which I'll elaborate on briefly in a moment. Then number two is that even if the committee is intent on criminalizing substantially the same conduct as is already prohibited under the civil law, the Equality Act, the Equality Act has been amended by the Constitutional Court in Gwelane, and the current formulation doesn't match the Constitutional Court's formulation in Gwelane. So it would need to be adapted to match that, and also would need to be made a subjective test rather than an objective test, because we're dealing here with criminal law and not civil law. And thirdly, in Gwelane, the Constitutional Court found that hate speech prohibitions cannot apply to private communications, whereas the current formulation of the offense of hate speech in the bill does apply to private communications. So that obviously would need to be adapted. So let's move then into more detail on our first point. So the prohibition on hate speech must be seen in the context of what is already criminalized in South Africa.
Yeah, so,
Pardon, sorry?
Yeah, left with 5 minutes.
5 minutes, thank you. So there is already a criminal prohibition in the Rome Statute Act on incitement to genocide. There are common law crimes of incitement to commit any serious offense, incitement to public violence, and crimen injuria. Now, if the hate crimes chapter is enacted into law, then that will sufficiently mean that those speech prohibitions, those criminal prohibitions on incitement speech, as well as intimidation of an individual under the Intimidation Act, where committed with a hateful motive or based on prohibited grounds, then that already would be regarded as a hate crime, crimen injuria, or hate crime intimidation, or hate crime incitement to public violence, or incitement to commit another offense. So there's no need then to separately criminalize hate speech or speech that falls into those criminal categories that's committed with a hateful motive. That will be regarded as excessive and unnecessary. Now, I've indicated why it would not pass constitutional muster to criminalize that which is already prohibited under Section 10. Now, it is permissible for the legislature to do what it did in the Equality Act, which is to go beyond the extreme speech that is excluded from the category of protected speech in Section 16.2c of the Constitution. Now, we're talking about advocacy of hatred based on prohibited grounds that constitutes incitement to cause harm. So there is no impediment to Parliament passing an act that criminalizes the speech described in Section 16.2c of the Constitution, because that is not protectable speech. There can't be a successful constitutional challenge against the criminalization of that speech. And we would submit that the best way to insulate the act or this bill, once it becomes an act, from a constitutional challenge would be to track the language of 16.2c of the Constitution. There then isn't any gap of, you know, hate speech that then is not prohibited, because it's dealt with either by the civil law or the existing criminal offences. Can just move to the next slide. So this is the alternative formulation we would propose, that any person who intentionally engages in advocacy of hatred that constitutes incitement to cause harm based on one or more of the following grounds is guilty of an offence of hate speech. And we'd respectfully submit that this would be the appropriate balance and the best way to ensure that the act will pass constitutional muster, or this offense will pass constitutional muster, while serving the legitimate purposes of protecting people's dignity and equality. Then I'll move briefly to the next slide. I think we might have missed one. Sorry, can you just go back, Tandy? Okay, I see. So this was our primary suggestion. Now, the issue that we have, the other issue we have in respect of hate speech, you've seen our submissions, our written submissions on hate crimes. I won't repeat those given the time that we have. But it's important to note that the current formulation in the bill of the hate speech prohibition, if you're not convinced that to use the formulation we've proposed, it will at the very least need to be adapted in two ways. One is that the elements of harm and hatred are at the moment alternative or disjunctive in the bill. So they're joined by the word or. So either harmful or inciting harm, or promoting or propagating hatred. Now in Kwelane, the Constitutional Court said that it has to be both. It has to be cumulative or conjunctive, otherwise it will excessively limit the right to freedom of expression. So the word or has to be replaced with the word and. And the other problem is that because this is a criminal statute, the standard in criminal law, apart from the offense of culpable homicide, is intention. Now, the current formulation of the bill uses an objective test, that it's could be reasonably interpreted to demonstrate the prohibited intentions, which is an objective test which isn't compatible with our criminal law that requires a subjective test, that requires intention to commit the proscribed harms in order for a person to be convicted. So that also would then be challenged as a limitation on the right to freedom of expression, as well as personal freedom and security, the right not to be detained without just cause. So those are our primary submissions. I think I'll just hand over to Tandi to wrap up in the remaining minute or two, and then we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thanks very much, Ben.
You do not have a remaining minute, or you have a half a minute.
Okay, all right. Then I'll go straight to our conclusion. Apologies for that. I hope that we can deal with some of the issues in the Q&A. I think just to highlight in the 30 seconds that we have, we want to reiterate that a bill such as this one needs to add to building social cohesion and breaking cycles of hate and prejudice. And I think that is one of the key takeaways, as well as looking at how we integrate principles of restorative justice as part of education and information campaigns. There is a vital need for the legal framework to address hate crimes and hate speech. But as we've highlighted in our submissions, the bill as it stands will not pass constitutional muster, and we therefore urge the committee to take all necessary steps to ensure that the bill is more narrowly focused and carefully drafted to deepen efforts to protect the marginalized and promote equality, justice, and social cohesion. And with that, we thank you for the opportunity to make this submission.
Thank you very much.
Any questions?
Thank you very much. Members, are there any questions or comments? Honorable Stephen Salt and Honorable Leibold Strachans.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the presenters from Media Monitoring. I find the arguments very persuasive and concerning, particularly given that there's almost broad consensus in the committee about the hate crimes aspect, and there's been a lot of discussion as to whether the hate speech aspects are needed at all, given the existing legislation such as the PUDA, such as pointed out by the presenters. And this does lead one to consider and ask the specific question whether their view is that the hate speech section should be totally excluded given existing legislation to avoid the delays on the hate crimes aspect coming into law through constitutional litigation. Highly unlikely that the hate crimes aspect will be litigated upon, but one might find the whole bill being delayed due to constitutional challenges purely on the hate speech aspect. And we know there's a lot of opposition to that, such as the previous presenters made, such as the 78,000 petitions that were sent to the department. What is your view on that? And secondly, should the committee should the committee continue with the hate speech provisions, would it, in your view, be sufficient should your amendments be included to meet any constitutional challenges, given the fact that you are linking the hate speech provisions directly to Section 16.2? Thank you, Chair, for that.
Thank you very much, Honourable Sart, Honourable Neville Johan.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you to the MMA for their presentation. Well, thank you for your presentation. First, the first presenter said that you're working with children, and there's also a project with children in terms of this bill. Now, I'd like to know what was the outcome of what the children said with regard to this bill. If you can explain a little bit more about that. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Ms. Ling Tro from Same Love Toti, we don't allow members of the public at this stage to ask questions to one another. It's only members of parliament and members from the Department of Justice who are allowed to ask questions. Thank you very much. Over to you with responses.
Thank you, Chair. I'll just briefly answer Honourable Swart's question and then hand over to my colleague to answer Honourable Nuvo Druchen's question. We don't believe it's appropriate to jettison the hate speech chapter completely. And the reason I say that is this, is that under international law, South Africa is actually obliged under the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights and other acts or conventions, like the Convention on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination, is actually obliged to criminalize extreme hate speech. So advocacy of hatred that constitutes incitement to discrimination, hostility, or violence. That's the language used in the Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. So we do actually have to criminalize extreme hate speech. But the safe way to do that, and it's a completely safe way to do that, is to use the formulation with respect that we've proposed, which is to use the language of Section 16(2)(c) of the Constitution. Because no one who is reasonably legally advised will challenge a provision that simply uses the language of 16(2)(c) of the Constitution, because that category of speech is simply not protectable at all. So if the hate speech provision simply uses that language, then there can't be a successful constitutional challenge against it. So it would be perhaps too extreme a reaction to take out the hate speech chapter completely, because it is important also to not only to deal with the downstream incitement to genocide, but also the upstream persecutive speech that we saw in Rwanda and Yugoslavia and Germany before the Holocaust. So those would be our submissions. And I hand over to Tani to deal with the other question.
Thank you, Advocate Wu.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for those questions. My colleague Advocate Winks has addressed the issue on hate speech. I'll touch on the next one, just from the children submission. We held a workshop with 55 young people, and what was really interesting was the emphasis from their submissions was more around the prevention and combating of hate speech. We will gladly share the submission with the committee. And that was one of the key reasons why we included the point around restorative justice in our submission, was that the point that simply putting people in jail would not solve the problem. And that came directly from our work with children. But we'll gladly share that submission with you once again. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your presentation, Media Monitoring Africa. Some of the issues you have raised, we will consider them when we deliberate on the bill, when we deal with it clause by clause. We will take all the presentations that have been made into consideration. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair and committee members, and we wish you well with your deliberations.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Tanya. Thank you. Bye. Consortium for Refugees and Migrants in South Africa. Are they on the virtual platform? Okay, yes. You can start.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee. My name is Tifuru Beri Sintumure. I'm the Executive Director at the Consortium for Refugees and Migrants in South Africa. I will be presenting our oral submission with regard to the prevention and combating of the hate crimes and hate speech bill on behalf of the Consortium for Refugees and Migrants in South Africa. My presentation will be comprised by three components. introduction and information about our organizations, then the proposed submission that we have already made through our written submission, which we will be happy to share with the members of the portfolio committee once again, and then it will be closure.
You have 20 minutes.
Thank you, Chair. The Consortium for Refugees and Migrants in South Africa is pleased to make this submission on the published submission on the prevention and combating of the hate crime and hate speech bill. A little bit of a background about our organization is that COMSA is a national network of 26 member organizations in good standing, whose main objectives and missions are the promotion and protection of the human rights of asylum seekers, refugees, migrants in a ways that promote well-being of all in South Africa, the SADC region, and globally. COMSA model is such that through our members and partners collectively, we cover work at local, provincial, national, sub-regional, regional, and global levels to ensure that daily challenges faced by non-nationals are addressed through policy and practices, which goes along with the implementation of the inclusive policies in South Africa. To begin with our submissions, which we have already submitted our written submission to the portfolio committee, I will want to also emphasize, Chair, that we are also endorsing the submissions that were made by the hate crime and working group before this committee. COMSA takes note that the bill aims to give effect to the Republic obligation in terms of the Constitution and international human rights instrument concerning racism, racial discrimination, xenophobia, and related intolerance in accordance with the international law obligations. For example, persecution of persons who commit those offenses. COMSA is concerned that this bill focuses more on criminalization of offenses and is silent in outlining processes and procedures to the address of the root causes of those offenses. And we are much concerned that if the bill is adopted into law without outlining the rehabilitation processes of those concerned, the bill will present a much problem to the members of the law enforcement agencies, especially the South African Police Services and the Correctional Services officers, in terms of correcting the offenders with regard to the core offenses that they would have committed against the bill. COMSA proposes that before passing this bill into law, the government should outline and put in place mechanisms that will address the causes of the hate crimes and hate speech and rehabilitation processes of those concerned. We have seen, Chair, in the current spate of xenophobia in South Africa, that the National Action Plan that is governed or that is being administered by the National Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, it is there, but it's not being utilized in order to address some elements of xenophobia and other social ills on the grounds. And we really need that the National Action Plan needs to be given some muscles and being administered so that it can also address and put some mechanism in place with regard to issues of xenophobia and other related intolerance that are currently taking place in our communities. There is a need for legal regulation to guide behavior change rather than only focusing on criminalization. However, the bill should not stop at criminalizing hate crimes and hate speech, but it should take the important steps of tasking the state, ostensibly government at all levels, as well as Chapter 9 institution, in terms of addressing the hate crimes and hate speech offenses in our community level. COMSA is satisfied that the bill recognizes Section 9, Subsection 1 of the South African Constitution, that of everyone is equal before the law and has the right to equal protection and benefit of the law. And Section 9, Subsection 3 reads together with Subsection 4. Because if you look at the constitutional section, it talks about that the state cannot discriminate based on the various levels of origin, birth, HIV status, language, nationality and so forth. So we are very much pleased, but our target beneficiaries will be included, not to be excluded, to be protected and benefit from this law. Section 1, definition, COMSA proposes the inclusion of the asylum seeker, xenophobia, racial discrimination, racism, and refugee and stateless definition as defined by the United Nations High Commission for Refugees. We feel that the definitions that have been provided under this bill, they are not sufficient enough because the bill left out this critical components that will help guide the law enforcement agencies who will be policing this bill in terms of understanding if a person is an asylum seeker, they are referring to who an asylum seeker person is and what is a xenophobia and what constitutes a racial discrimination and what is racism and who is a refugee and who is a stateless person within the South African context. We are proposing that this definition should and must be well explained and well be included within the bill so that the law enforcement agency or personnel or officials who will be officiating this bill will be in a position to interpret all these categories of people very well. Because why are we saying this as COMSA? It's because we have seen in the practical level when we are engaging with the law enforcement agencies and the community members at a broader level or on a community level, there is a greater challenge and a problem that gets to be posed in terms of understanding the categories of people who are in our communities, more especially in terms of who is an asylum seeker, who is a refugee, who is an economic migrant, and who is a stateless. This will also help the Department of Justice to provide information and education level to both the community and the law enforcement agency by defining these categories of elements or categories of terms. Section 2, object of the Act. COMSA proposes the insertion of age under the Roman figures that have been proposed on the bill to provide for the promotion and addressing the root causes and the rehabilitation processes that the department will have outlined, as it was previously mentioned, that there has to be some outlining and provision that talks to the rehabilitation processes and addressing the root causes of those hate crime and hate speech. Section 3, subsection 1, offense of hate crimes. On Roman figure K, COMSA proposes the insertion of asylum seekers and stateless as a group of people that exist and live in the Republic of South Africa. COMSA believes that leaving them out as a group of people will subject them to further hate crimes as they are not recognized by the bills. So we also propose the insertion of these categories of people on Section 4, subsection 1, on the offenses of hate speech. Because when we were making our written submission, we have realized that this category of people, they seem in most occasions being left out and they are not mentioned. And they are protected by the laws of South Africa, more especially the Refugee Act of 1998 and the statelessness as per the court judgment that have been presented to address issues of statelessness in South Africa. Section 4, subsection 1b, COMSA proposes the insertion of the word unintentionally in this section to read, any person who unintentionally or intentionally distribute or make available an electronic communication which that person knows constitute hate speech as contemplated in paragraph A through an electronic communication system, which is also on the section 1, subsection 1, C as well. Because in our interrogation and our practical intervention on a community level, we have oftenly witnessed political leaders, or more especially during elections, when they will do their electioneering at the expense of the non-nationals who are in South Africa, and when they are called to order and to respond or to account for their statement, they will then say they are quoted out of context and it was not intentionally. So we are hoping that if the word unintentionally is inserted in this section, it will also address the rhetoric statement that politicians utter out during the election processes. This was a clear example during the last year's local municipal election, where we saw quite a number of political parties, especially the minority parties. They were electioneering through at the expense of the migrant and non-nationals who are in South Africa, with a statement such as that government cannot provide services because we have got huge influx of migrant in our communities, scapegoating the real issue of service delivery and other related issues, and making excuse based on the migrants. So we are hoping that if the word unintentional is inserted, it will then put some refraining and some limitation to the leaders and political persons to make such statement and later come back to say it was unintentional or I was quoted out of context. Section 4, subsection 2A, COMSA proposes that this subsection be rephrased to limit and caution politicians not to use this section for their electioneering and luring supporters. This is a build up to the previous statement that I have already alluded to. Yes, of course, it might have some contradiction with the section 16, I believe, in the constitution, the one of the freedom of expression, but it needs to be rephrased and put the word unintentionally so that we don't leave it open and for the use of the politicians and other political figures, including the traditional leaders and other community leaders and other social movements that we have seen in our community level when they issue out statements that are rhetoric and promote xenophobia and hatred in our community, and later to come back and say, I was quoted out of context and it was my freedom of expression. We believe that the committee should find ways of rephrasing this section to make sure that the abuse of the freedom of expression does not go out without being cautioned. Section 5, subsection 1. Thank you, Chair. I will be closing now. Section 5, subsection 1, victim impact statement. COMSA makes a submission of the word testimony to be included on the section to read, for purpose of this section, a victim impact statement means a sworn statement or affirmation or a testimony in a situation where a victim will be available to make his or her own testimony that will be captured to support the action or to support the hate crime or hate speech that has been committed against them. And then we also made submission on section 6 on penalties and orders. COMSA is concerned about the lack of clarification on which law this bill is trying to support or amend. For example, two laws are spelled out as Criminal Procedures Act and only one section, 276, is quoted, and section 51 of the Criminal Law Amendment Act of 1997. So COMSA is making submission so that it can clarify in terms of which laws this bill is actually asserting to and is going to be supporting in terms of enhancing the protection of all the individuals who are in South Africa when it comes to issues of hate speech and hate crime that will be committed against them. There is a further confusion that the bill on Section 6A indicates that the court sentencing the person considering appropriate and which is within that court's penal jurisdiction. This statement still leaves it open for sentencing court to decide which law to use in sentencing the perpetrators. So COMSA is making this submission to the committee so that this bill can clarify and give direction in terms of which law will be used in supporting the implementation of this bill. We also made this following submission on Section 7 on directive. COMSA welcomes this proposed section and proposes that the duration of expecting the directive should be between 8 to 12 weeks, which approximately reads between 60 to 90 days, reasonable so. Section 9, prevention of the hate crimes and hate speech. It is difficult for COMSA to accept this section and its subsection on a number of issues and content contained in this section. And some of those sections and issues, we have raised them on our return submission that we'll be happy to share with the portfolio committee to consider why we are saying it is difficult for us to accept this section. For example, subsection one, this section generalizes the state as responsible and therefore fails to indicate specifically on which level of the state will intervene and what ministry will be engaging the bill. And we also want this to be applicable to the subsection two, to section two and one. When I'm finishing, on section nine, subsection three, which proposes that judicial officers for the purposes of presiding in court proceeding, COMSA is against the view that training should be for judicial officers only for the purposes of this act. COMSA proposes that this training should be escalated to the Chapter 9 institution, decision makers, officers, and prosecutors, not leaving out the South African police services, so that they can be capacitated and empowered to be able to implement this bill and its regulation and its sections. Still on section 9, subsection 3, COMSA requests the meaning of the social context training to be clarified or defined on the bill for the purposes of this bill and interpretation during the implementation of this bill. Because leaving it out as being social context training, it does not provide the indication on in which context the bill is referring to. Our last slide, COMSA submission on section 10 regulation. COMSA proposes the removal of may to stick to on must for the section to read, the cabinet members responsible for the administration of the justice must, where applicable, make regulation regarding any matter which is required and permitted by this act to be prescribed by regulation or any other matter which is necessary or expedient to prescribe in order to achieve the objective of this act. So these are some of the submissions that we thought we should come and make oral submission based on what we have submitted through our written submission. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, COMSA. Members, are there any questions to COMSA? And no questions. Thank you very much. Your inputs would be considered when we go through the bill. When we do clause by clause, we would consider every submission that was made before us. Thank you very much for taking time and effort to enrich the process of lawmaking in our country. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Members, can we have a 10-minute break and 9-minute break and come back at 10 to answer the call of nature and just have tea? Thank you very much. Let's come back at now at 10. We are left with three organizations now. I hope Association of Christian Media is here and Campaign for Free Expression is here in AfriForum. Thank you.
Good day, members. Good day to the presenters. The next presenters, can you please check the chat? I've been sending you messages on the chat with email so that you can email us our presentations. Can you check the chat? The next three presenters from AfriForum. Professor Haba, I've already received yours. Thank you. Mr. Rosenthal, I'll give you permission to share. Can you test if you are able to share your presentation now so that we, when you are called upon, you just share? Philip? You are muted, sir. You are muted. You are still muted, sir.
Sorry. Okay, I'm here. You can see me now?
Yes, I can see you. I've already given you permission to share. Can you test?
There we go. Can you see that?
No, not yet. Can you test? Maybe double click on the document.
Okay. Okay, yes. Sorry, I must, yes, I've got the document open, but I am now going to go to sharing. Okay, so that is the first slide. Is that all okay?
Yes, that's good. You can remove it now and you'll just upload it when you are called upon. Can you do me a favor? I've already on the chat. I've already, if you can drop the presentation on the chat, or you can email me because I've already sent you my email address on the chat. Can you?
Yeah, okay. But could I do that after the presentation? Because we've got, it's only 1 minute or something until we're starting.
So we're starting at 10. We've got 5 minutes. We're starting at 10. Because I would like members to have it on their devices, some of the members. If that's not too much to ask.
I will try and copy this on the chat. You can just excuse my technical learning how to do this.
No. I understand you fully. Hence, I'm taking the break to take you through it. Okay. You can remove it for now.
No. Fine. I'm sorry. Excuse me, but my screen is now sort of minimized, and I'm just struggling to get it back again so that I can see everything. Sorry, can I stop sharing, because then I think
yes,
make it easier. It doesn't allow you to share on the chat plus thing at the same time. So
you can just copy and paste it on the chat, then I'll get it from there, which is easier. And then you'll only upload when the chair calls upon you. You'll only share the presentation when the chair calls.
Yeah. Okay. But if you couldn't just, I would prefer to do this afterwards because I...
No problem, sir. It's fine.
Okay.
Let's do it afterwards.
Because I seem to have, I'm just having a little bit of technical difficulty. Okay. And I would rather have the is this sharing everything that I'm doing, or is it stopped now?
No, you're safe. We can't see your screen.
Okay. There we go. Okay, I've shared that on the chat directly to you. Should I share that to everybody else as well?
Oh, you may, it's fine, but I have it. I'll send it to members. Thanks.
Okay. I think you must just
unmute. You are muted, sir. You are muted.
Yeah, I don't understand why.
No, you're fine now.
Yeah, okay.
We'll then wait for the chair just to call Panam Chen. We're just left with 1 minute now, and he will then share the presentation. Thanks, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. We can start. Good morning, Mr. Rosenthal, for the Association of Christian Media. You are welcome. You have 20 minutes to make your presentation.
Okay, great. I'm going to start off firstly by just outlining our concerns and position. Then I'm going to go into some case examples of how hate speech can be wrongly used, and people can be accused of hate speech who are in fact not guilty at all. And I'll give some case examples. And while I'm doing that, I would like everybody who's listening to think about whether you might one day be wrongly accused of hate speech under this legislation. The risk is with this proposal to criminalize hate speech with a very broad definition that people might be made to be afraid to speak up with their opinions when in fact it's not hate speech at all. Now, just to introduce the Association of Christian Media, it's a group of 70 organizations, which includes about 30 community radio stations, some television and magazines. And in this media, there are many different varying opinions that are expressed, and they would also make space for people who hold opposite viewpoints to the even the radio station themselves to facilitate public debate. And this there can be examples of this that I'll mention in future, but this debate might be suppressed by the risk that somebody might be accused of hate speech. Now, to go firstly into the case examples, and I'm going to be giving some slides. This is an example. These are current case examples. This is not stuff that happened a long time ago. This is a person who is a feminist activist in England who put up a billboard giving the dictionary definition of a woman. And she was then accused of hate speech. She was interrogated by the police, and the billboard company, accepting this allegation, took down all of her billboards. So she was then silenced from giving that opinion. Now, this is not a particularly Christian opinion, but we have entirely opposite opinions which are also being silenced. Now, we have a case which happened in Durban earlier this year, where a street evangelist, and on your right is a picture of him from the screenshot of where he was accused, was preaching in the street, and somebody took a social media video of him and posted it on the internet, where he was trying to persuade other Indians to convert from Hinduism to Christianity. He argued that Jesus was greater than the Hindu gods. He was then accused of saying that, wrongly accused of saying that Christians were better than Hindus, and then that was considered to be hate speech. And so that the Hindu interest group sued him for R1 million damages. He was forced to expend money and stress on a court case. Thankfully, the thing was settled out of court after it had gone to court. But this then would really put a damper and a chilling effect on people expressing those opinions, which I think are part of our fair religious discussion. Now, here's one that's, I think, closer to home, which is a Finnish MP, Pavi Rantanen, who is currently on trial for criminal hate speech, for posting a social media post of a Bible verse. I put the English translation in the middle. There's a picture of her there, and she on the right-hand side is the actual screenshot of what she posted, just so you can see it's the same. She was entering into a social media debate, but then the national prosecutor decided to prosecute the member of parliament, and this has now been ongoing for about 6 months. They're wanting to fine her 6 months of salary and possibly even a prison sentence for something that to me is not hate speech at all. That is just a Bible verse. But they would like to, certain interest groups who've got political power would like to shut down any kind of religious debate on these issues. So this is something really that's we haven't seen in Europe maybe since the fascist era of the Second World War, but is now coming back, where people are really being punished for what they are saying. Just another thing, example that happened just very recently is American politician who is a biological male who presents himself as a female. An American magazine nominated him as Woman of the Year, and another satirical website nominated them then as Man of the Year, and this was then accused of hate speech. We've had other examples that I would also many other examples that I've experienced, but I've just put these examples just so that we can see that these issues are not just the genuine hate speech that where people are willfully intending to harm other people. Now, we've got a situation where there is a raft of legislation that is in process at the moment. Some of it's been passed and some of it's in the pipeline, which if all of this was passed as it is at the moment, would drastically reduce the opportunity for free speech in this country, and I think push it closer to a situation like China or Russia or Saudi Arabia, where you need to say the things only that are aligned with the people in power, and to try and protect yourself against those risks. And this would drastically cut down community radio, freedom of the press, if all of these things were passed as is. Now, we would argue that this hate speech legislation is unnecessary because there is other existing multiple pieces of legislation that you can use to deal with hate speech. We've got the Incitement Act, Criminal Injurer, Harassment Act, the Equality Act, defamation law, the underlying criminal acts of if somebody commits murder or violence, there are laws that punish that. There are codes of conduct. We have the Film and Publications Bill. So there are many vehicles to prosecute these things. But this is, I believe, similar to a nuclear attack where you can really destroy both hate speech and legitimate speech at the same time. And we don't want that. I also believe that this proposal as it stands is not constitutional because, and that's been confirmed by the recent Qualani judgment. The very subtle changes in wording that can have an enormous impact in terms of what happens on the ground. And I think that there are four basic words that are important that we have to see here, but the way that those words are combined together into law can make a huge difference as to whether legitimate speech is captured or whether legitimate speech is not captured. So I'm going to go through very quickly just the meaning of some of those words and how it makes a difference how you put them together. The first is advocacy. That infers an intention and usually an ongoing campaign to push a particular viewpoint. That is not an accidental statement. The second thing is hatred. That is something which is not just an expression of an opinion, but something that has malice. Then there is incitement to cause harm, which is trying to motivate other people to harm other people. And normally the assumption is that that would be physical harm, and that can be very dangerous if somebody is inciting other people to harm other people. Then there is the question of harm, which is broader because that can be the harm that somebody perceives the words do to them. So now the danger there is that simply because somebody is offended by what is said, they can say, well, I'm being psychologically harmed by that. And then that becomes very dangerous. Now, if that is criminally prosecuted, then people are going to be much more careful about what they are going to say, and that can shut down real debate. But having said these four issues, the question is how they are combined together. And Section 41A in this hate speech bill is saying that you need the first one, advocacy, hatred, or you need incitement to cause harm. Now, the Qualani judgment said you need both in order to make it an offense just as a civil offense, but this is a criminal offense, so the threshold should be narrower, and so it has to be an and, not an or, if one's going to have that. Now, there are then in Section 4.2 a number of exceptions where there's a positive attempt to open the door for religious scientific statements, which would reduce the harm that this bill would do and reduce the risk. But they then have qualifiers on each of those, such as, for example, they would say, to the extent that such interpretation or proselytization does not advocate hatred that constitutes incitement to cause harm. So the thing is now, if you put an and at the beginning there, that statement becomes completely meaningless and unnecessary, except to water down what has already been said. So I would say first, the first option is to not pass this bill, remove it altogether. But if one is going to have this bill, then we must make the 4.1 A into an and we must also remove this exception to the extent because it's unnecessary, and it would be then a circular reference and leave the judge confused as to what is meant here. So, and that I would say also in terms of 2A, which is artistic creativity. Now, the other issue which I would just raise, which is concerning, is that a number of presenters have referenced the Yogyakarta principles as international law, which Parliament is somehow obliged to follow. Now, firstly, that is not international law. Yogyakarta was simply an NGO conference of like-minded NGOs who got together and had a discussion. It has no status at the United Nations, neither has it been ratified by the South African Parliament. And so that is entirely misleading to say that South Africa must now abide by that. There's also multiple things in international law which are balancing to this whole issue of hate crimes. There's statements protecting the family, there's statements protecting free speech. And if you take these all in a balanced way, you come out with something that is very similar to what we already have in the definition of unprotected speech in the Constitution, Section 16. And that is what we would support as a correct definition of hate speech, and not go further than that. Then there's also the categories of all the different sort of victim categories which can be classified as hate speech. I would say that this is very confusing, having two lists in the same bill and a different list in the Constitution, and it's not clear always why one thing is in one list and not in another list. I would argue stick with the list that is in the Constitution that was thought through very carefully, and it's based on international precedent. The difficulty with making a broad list, and I was shuddered to hear the suggestion of an open-ended list, which I would concur with the Department of Justice is not in the principle of legality, is that anybody who has a particular viewpoint can then start to frame themselves as a victim and say, well, I'm being victimized by the people who have an opposite opinion, when it's not hate speech at all, and then try and bring in the threats of criminal sanctions. And without this thing going to court, most people, 9 out of 10 people given a threat, are going to back down without the need for the thing to go to court. It's an enormous cost and emotional toll to actually go through with a court process, and 9 out of 10 people will just back down. This will have a chilling effect on free speech. So we would argue that this is just entirely unnecessary. This opening up with all these other categories is an experiment that can open the door for every NGO that has a particular interest to attack some other group that it doesn't agree with and accuse them of hate speech. And the most aggressive people are going to win in this fight. So we would argue that this this needs to be preferably scrapped altogether. But if it is kept, then we need to put in that and instead of an or in section 4.1 and then in section 4.2, the qualifiers need to be removed. I've also heard senior politician interpret this in such a way as the religious exception would only apply to things said in church. Now that I don't agree with as the correct interpretation of this thing, because it talks about proselytization. But the very fact that he's suggesting that means that he could threaten somebody, they could be prosecuted, and then they have to go through 5 years of court process and appeals before finally the Constitutional Court says, no, that was a wrong interpretation by the Department of Justice. Meanwhile, you know, R1 million being expended if the person has the money, but if he doesn't have the money, then he's can be wrongfully found guilty or intimidated. So I think that the bill as it is at the moment is very dangerous, and it's also concerning this talk about sensitivity training that is many times being used in other countries and other places and in our universities as an attempt to force people to change their opinions. I can give case examples that have happened just recently in our local universities. People have been threatened with their careers, and if they don't retract opinions, say, for example, somebody expressed an opinion that a man should be head of the household and he's then accused of hate speech against women, which clearly wasn't, but that was the way to interpret it. Okay. So my call is either scrap this bill altogether or tighten it up with a shorter list in line with the Constitution and much narrower definition of what is hate speech. But I don't see a need for this at all. And I think it can have a very detrimental effect on public debate. Another case example, I had participated in a radio debate against a person who was arguing that the Bible promotes racism and that black people are inferior. That was hosted on an Association of Christian Media statement. It's still on the internet if you want to listen to it. But we had a successful debate and we felt that was helpful in proving that point. But with this legislation, just the person who communicates these views and giving space for debate then could be prosecuted, not only the person who says it. And that, to me, is unhealthy. And we should try and have debate open as much as possible, short of actual real incitement to violence or harm, which is something which is already covered by other legislation. So maybe we can go to questions.
Thank you very much, Rosenthal. There is an echo on your side.
Can people hear me or is there a problem?
When I speak, I couldn't hear myself, but now it's fine.
Okay,
Thank you very much, members. Any questions to Mr. Rosenthal or comments? None. Thank you very much, Mr. Rosenthal, for contributing to our legislative drafting. All views will be taken into consideration when the bill is dealt with clause by clause. Thank you very much. Thank you. Let's look at the next organization. A campaign for free expression. Is it on the platform?
Thank you very much. I am here. But I am just, thank you. It seems I can now share my screen. Let me try. Sorry, I'm having trouble sharing my screen.
Let's give you a minute to do that.
It's not letting me. It says I don't have permission.
Can you give him permission to enable his screen?
Yes, Chair. The Prof has permission. Can you, when you share, Prof, double click on the selected presentation?
Okay, I'm getting in now. Yes.
Yes. Now we can see.
You can see it.
Yes, but now it's fine.
Okay, can I proceed?
Yes, welcome, Professor Haber.
Thank you very much, and thank you. I'm grateful for the opportunity to address this bill, an important bill, and something we've thought about a great deal, so thank you.
You have 20 minutes.
Let me just start by saying CFE, the Campaign for Free Expression, is a new registered public benefit organization, non-profit body with a very clear focus to defend and expand the right to free expression for all in Southern Africa. That's our focus, free expression. We independent body, fiercely non-partisan. Let me say that with me today in the room are our legal representatives, Carol Steinberg, who's also a member of our board, and Daria Milo. Just by way of introduction, the other members of our board are Tawana Cooper, Ismail Mohammed, and Adrian Basson. I think my colleagues, Sesi Makantisi and Margaret Zulu, are also joining us in the room, so thank you. I want to say up front that we agree with Parliament that it's necessary to tackle the scourge of hate speech. We are with them on that. What we want to discuss and raise issues about is the most effective way in which to do that. So we're with you on the basic principle of we have to deal and confront hate speech, but how we do it is a question, I think, that's up for discussion. I'm going to start by just looking at David Irving as an illustration of our critical point. David Irving was an anti-Semite and Holocaust denier, British, who was prosecuted for hate speech, for Holocaust denial and anti-Semitism in a number of countries. The effect of his prosecution was not to stop him speaking, but he was convicted and jailed, but he became an international martyr and celebrity of right-wing causes. So in many ways, the prosecution backfired and gave a wider platform to his views in a very worrying way. The other case I want to talk about is the criminalization of many kinds of speech under apartheid. What you're looking at is copies of my own, the newspaper I edited at the time, the Weekly Mail, and you're looking at editions that were banned or led to prosecution of the newspaper. And, you know, those prosecutions gave us a national and international platform. And I think we all know that nothing promoted the circulation, for example, of ANC literature more than the criminalization of the ownership of that literature. And when it was banned, it was passed around even more actively and energetically. It pushed up the value of that information. And so this is the cautionary background I want us to take in mind. Our basic position we want to argue today is that we abhor hate speech and we welcome appropriate measures to prevent and counter it. But we don't believe it's productive or effective to criminalize hate speech. And this is the issue we wish to address. Why we shouldn't criminalize hate speech? As I've said, the apartheid regime was infamous for criminalizing speech and prosecuting many people for having banned documents, for saying things that they didn't want said. And I would argue it had the opposite effect of what was intended. It meant that ANC literature, for example, was passed around, that people sat up to listen to Radio Freedom. I know that our newspaper, when they banned it, copies were in huge demand, and sometimes our sales even went up. And that's the nature of the way criminalization often works. And I think experience around the world, and I've given the example of the banning of Nazi propaganda in Germany, shows that criminalization often gives those who prosecuted fame, attention, and celebrity status. On my presentation, I've marked the paragraphs I'm referring to with much fuller detail in our submission, just for reference sake. So our view is that criminalizing speech will force it underground and in fact encourage some people to spread it illegally, and we should be careful of that. But there's another critical point, which I think has been made this morning already, that there are already less restrictive means to deal effectively with hate speech in our law, both in our criminal and our civil law. We saw in the Quilani case that the Equality Act was effective in dealing with hate speech. In the Penny Sparrow and other cases, we saw crime and injuria successfully used to deal with hate speech. There's also been cases in the use of incitement to deal with problematic speech of this sort. And unused and can also be used, we believe, are the criminal charges against assault, which could include verbal assault, such as hate speech. And I think a very important thing is that Clause 3 of the bill we're looking at today bolsters these laws in that it deems that if any crime is committed with a hate motivation, then it's treated as more serious by the courts and penalties will be larger. And this is a move we support. We want to say that we are strongly in support of Clause 3 because we think that strengthens the existing law that deals with hate speech, and that is a good thing. And so we argue that Clause 4 is not necessary to curb hate speech and should be scrapped. But we would say that if it's not scrapped, then it is important that it be narrowed down to target only the most extreme expressions of hate speech. And I think those are best defined by what the Constitution in 16.1 deems and 16.2 deems unworthy of protection. There are other serious flaws in the bill that I think must be mentioned. And particularly they relate to whether one's criminalizing the hate speech. Because if one isn't criminalizing, as in the Equality Bill, where you're looking towards other restorative justice and other measures, then the legal requirements are different. But here we have such a wide spectrum of speech that we don't believe it would stand constitutional scrutiny if it's criminalized. As I said, it may be appropriate in the Equality Act, but not in a law that threatens prison, that it is required that we have a narrow view of serious hate crime. The bill also imposes liability for hate speech without the accused having to have a guilty mind. Clause 4.2.42c, which deals with this, is, I think, confusing and needs clarification because it appears to require that you have an intention to publish, but it's not clear that you need an intention to cause harm or to spread hate speech. And that needs to be clarified, I believe, because otherwise, without intention, it would go against one of the core principles of our criminal law, that to commit a crime, you have to have intention. A couple of other flaws in the bill. The offense for sharing and distributing 41C hate speech is worryingly broad. And I think this is illustrated by saying that one could be prosecuted even if one shares hate speech in order to expose it. And one's reminded that in the Penny Sparrow and Adam Katsavelos cases, they were exposed by others who shared their racist material but didn't condone it. So I think it's got to be clear that if you don't do it to spread hate speech, you do it to condone it, you just not to condone it, to expose it, etc., that you shouldn't be subject to possible criminal action, because clearly we want people to expose hate speech where it's up on social media in particular. Section 42C makes an exception for the publication of there's a number of exceptions, but this one is for the publication of any information, commentary, advertisement, or notice in accordance with Section 16.1 of the Constitution. And my concern is, our concern is that this is circular. It is it's saying that there's an exception if it's in accordance with the Constitution, and it's in accordance with the Constitution if it's in accordance with the Constitution. So I think that needs fixing and clarification and some attention. So I hope I've been brief. My conclusion, very simply, is that we welcome Clause 3 of the bill, which makes hatred an aggravating factor in any crime. We state strongly that we want to see firm action to stop hate speech, but we do not believe we need Clause 4. It's already adequately dealt with in other civil and criminal law. And in fact, we believe that putting it there will slow down and impede the approval and the constitutional court stamp on this legislation. We do not believe, as it stands at the moment, this bill would pass the constitutional test. Thank you very much. We go into this in more legal detail in our submission, but I welcome the opportunity to take questions and clarify anything we have dealt with.
Thank you very much, Professor Haber. Members, are there any questions on to Professor Haber and his team? None. No, thank you very much, Professor Haber, for contributing to the legislative drafting. We would be taking all the issues that have been raised by yourself and other presenters that have raised issues before. When we deal with the bill clause by clause, we will still revisit some of the issues that were raised, which I think are very important. So none whatsoever would be lost. And after this process, we are still going to have a session where we will be responding, but the department will be responding to each presentation that was made. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Professor Haber. After forum.
Yes, I'm ready to do my presentation. Thank you.
You have 20 minutes. Welcome, Mr. Van Zee. You have 20 minutes to do your presentation.
All right. May I start, Chairperson?
Yes, please.
All right. Good morning to everyone, and thank you for the opportunity, firstly, to and the platform to for AfriForum to give our comments on this bill. So just some quick admin out of the way. I am Adam Spansail. I'm Campaign Officer for Strategy and Content at AfriForum. And this will be AfriForum's response to the proposed Prevention and Combating of Hate Crimes and Hate Speech Bill, which we also submitted a written commentary on. So firstly, as a civil rights organization, AfriForum supports the imposing of sanctions on actual hate speech, which contains incitement to violence, as limited by the Constitution within its parameters. However, the proposed Prevention and Combating of Hate Crimes and Hate Speech Bill distorts the ordinary meaning of the term hate speech if passed into law, and it will effectively criminalize constitutionally protected speech. That is what AfriForum is worried about, and that's our key concern that we also voiced at the previous opportunity when this bill was also being put under consideration. Our submission will demonstrate that the bill infringes on the right of freedom of expression and therefore cannot pass in its current form because it doesn't live up to constitutional muster. Within the context of public policy, there are four main reasons why freedom of expression is so valuable. And I think that's what I want to lay out first before we get into the bill itself, because this is in the end inherently matter regarding freedom of expression, and therefore we need to make sure we got the fundamentals right and have our foundation laid for why freedom of expression is so important. So just quickly, the four reasons why, as AfriForum identified, is that firstly, it aids us in the search for truth. Secondly, it is vital for the functioning of a democracy. Third, it enhances moral agency. And fourth, it instills tolerance. I will now elaborate on each. Firstly, the matter of truth. Allowing the free dissemination of beliefs, opinions, and other forms of expression brings immense benefits for society and for individuals. It allows for intellectual, cultural, and scientific progress while provoking discussion and aiding the search for truth. Since we all make mistakes and are fallible, we cannot know with certainty that a particular opinion is false. When we suppress opinions that are believed to be false, we risk missing out on finding the actual truth if we are mistaken in that regard. If we stifle beliefs that are different from our own, we lose the opportunity to change, reconsider, and perhaps reaffirm our own views. Next, the matter of democracy. Freedom of expression is the cornerstone of a functioning democratic state. It exposes people to opposing viewpoints and allows them to make informed and legitimate decisions about their political and private lives. Your right to freedom of speech also enables you and others to defend you and others' rights if they are under attack. Without it, you are silent. Freedom of expression is therefore crucial to any constitutional order, seeing as without it, you can't really stand up for any of your other rights, seeing as you will not have your speech to do it. The matter of agency. Next, the legal philosopher Ronald Dworkin wrote, and I quote, "Morally responsible people insist on making up their own minds about what is good or bad in life or in politics, or what is true or false in matters of justice and faith. Government insults its citizens and denies their moral responsibility when it decrees that they cannot be trusted to hear opinions that might persuade them to dangerous or offensive convictions. We retain our dignity as individuals only by insisting that no one, no official, no majority, has the right to withhold an opinion from us on the ground that we are not fit to hear or consider it." And that is the end of that quote. When people are exposed to a range of conflicting opinions on a subject, they are given the opportunity to exercise their rational faculties and to weigh up the arguments on both sides and to form their own view on the matter. Societies that allow for a broad selection of opinions create an environment that strengthens people's analytical skills and trains them to question the views that are presented to them and not just accept them all by default as fact. Next, the matter of tolerance. In the case of the SANDU versus the Minister of Defense and another, the Constitutional Court held that, and I quote, "The corollary of freedom of expression and its related rights is tolerance by a society of different views. Tolerance, of course, does not require approbation of a particular view. In essence, it requires the acceptance of the public airing of disagreements and the refusal to silence unpopular views." In a seminal paper on the dangers of suppressing hateful speech, Denise Meyerson wrote, and I quote, and this is actually a sentiment that was expressed earlier in one of the presentations, I quote, "To drive an evil view underground can actually increase its strength, whereas to debate it out in the open is more likely to bring home its abhorrent nature. It is precisely those who, after all, believe there is a truth about the awfulness of racism who should be optimistic about the power of debate and argument to demonstrate that truth. They come to their views by reason, and since they do not believe themselves to be intellectually superior, should trust in reason rather than the police force as the better weapon against falsehood. It is only too easy for censorship laws to be put to different uses for those originally intended, and if we are happy for them to be deployed in one way, we make it much easier for them to be deployed in another, more frightening way later. And the final consideration here is that to the extent that racial animosities will continue to plague us, it is better to let them be played out at the level of words rather than to be bottled up, therefore not only increasing their virulence, but also making more likely a more dangerous kind of discharge. Forced as we are to weigh up evils here, we should therefore conclude that tolerance is more beneficial than costly," end quote. Now moving on to the details of the bill itself. So firstly, the bill's definition of harm. Section 1 of the bill states, harm means any emotional, psychological, physical, social, or economic harm. Now firstly, when it comes to emotional harm, a host of words can make people feel a range of emotions, such as anger, fear, anxiety, disgust, sadness, shock, and the list goes on. emotional harms are felt subjectively and they tend to be fleeting. And the case of Moyo versus Minister of Justice and Constitutional Development and others, and Masuku and another versus South African Human Rights Commission over South African Jewish Board of Deputies, make it clear that speech that provokes strong emotional responses or even instills fear is protected speech. That is what the conclusion of that court, of those court cases were, and therefore mere emotional harm is the wrong standard. Secondly, social harm. Unlike psychological, physical, and economic harm, the term social harm is a nebulous concept and may cover a range of yet-to-be-determined harms. Since its scope is unknown, it should be removed from the definition used in the bill. Next, the bill's definition of hate speech. Section 4 of the bill states that 1A, any person who intentionally publishes, propagates, or advocates anything or communicates to one or more persons in a manner that could reasonably construed to demonstrate a clear intention to, one, be harmful or to incite harm, or two, promote or propagate hatred, or three, based on one or more of the following grounds, and the bill then outlines an extensive list that I think everyone here is aware of. So on that matter of hate speech, the constitutional standard regarding hate speech is that of freedom of speech that does not extend to the advocacy of hatred that is based on race, ethnicity, gender, or religion, and which does not constitute incitement to violence or to cause harm. According to the bill, however, the mere propagation of hatred or harm is sufficient for the speech to be regarded as hate speech. Another problem, and that is problematic. Another problem, as noted before, is that the word harm is defined in the bill as including emotional harm and social harm. Furthermore, the grounds on which hate speech can be committed according to the bill are far too reaching and includes age, for example. The consequence of that means that mocking someone based on their age or using an expression like calling someone an old fart or an old fool could amount to a criminal offense punishable by 3 years in jail. The conjunctive test is the next thing that I want to touch on. In the Kwalani versus South African Human Rights Commission and another, the court settled a long-standing debate about whether the provisions of Section 10, number 1 of the Purpura ought to be read conjunctively or disjunctively. The court determined that they must be read conjunctively. This means that it would be unconstitutional to use the word or between Sections 4, 1, 1 Roman numeral and 2 Roman numeral of the bill. It is a necessary requirement to use the word and between these sections based on that case of Kwalani versus the South African Human Rights Commission and another. The next point that I want to touch on is listed grounds. The Constitution limits the specific grounds for hate speech to race, ethnicity, gender, and religion. Further grounds are listed in the Equality Clause, which supports the view that the Constitution And this supports the view that the Constitution deliberately limits hate speech to the four listed grounds of race, ethnicity, gender, and religion. To add further grounds without infringing on the right of free speech, the bill can be appropriately modified by including them under the correct threshold, as stipulated by the Constitution. The grounds on which hate speech can be committed according to the bill is therefore too far-reaching and includes many factors like, for example, age that open many problematic scenarios. Incitement to cause harm is the next point that I want to touch on. The ordinary meaning of the phrase incitement to cause harm suggests that one should not look to the harm caused by the speech itself, but rather to the impact of the speech on third parties, i.e., does the speech encourage, stimulate, or call others to cause harm? Next, AfriForum's presentation is not just critical of the bill and just listing things that we think are problematic about the bill. We also have recommendations on what can be done. So given that the bill introduces criminal sanctions, there is less room to limit the right to freedom of expression than may be allowable under Purpura. A legitimate purpose of the bill would be to protect people from imminent violence and incitement to cause harm. This can be achieved without unduly infringing the right to freedom of expression by using the limitations set out in Section 16, Section 2 of the Constitution to define hate speech. Further recommendations can be found in AfriForum's written submission. There's a further longer list there, but for the purposes of time, I can't go into all of it. So therefore, in conclusion, it is evident that the costs of adopting the definitions of harm and hate speech that are proposed by the bill would be heavy. It's also unclear whether there would be any benefit in doing so. As Judge Barker once said, and I quote, to deny free speech to engineer social change in the hope of accomplishing a greater good for one section of our society erodes the freedoms of all, end quote. We began by drawing a distinction between actual hate speech, which is constitutionally unprotected speech that incites harm or violence against vulnerable groups, and hate speech as defined by the bill, which prohibits protected speech that would be protected under the Constitution. Next, we examine the importance of the right to freedom of expression by demonstrating its role in a functioning democracy, search for truth, and personal development for citizens. We argue that the prohibition in the bill is a severe infringement on the right, because of the penalty that it imposes and perturbing effect it has on freedom of expression. We proceeded to argue that the state can take less restrictive measures by, one, changing the definitions of harm and hate speech that are used in the bill to render it constitutional. Second, addressing the problem of arbitrary persecution under the bill. And third, and lastly, using restorative justice measures to deal with most instances of hate speech and reserving imprisonment for cases where the targeted person or group of people suffered actual harm as a result of being incited against them. So that's the short version of AfriForum's recommendations in our written commentary. This bill in its current form will be unconstitutional if passed. And I think that's something that has been noted by many of the speakers that came before me, but it is a very important point that if this bill were to be passed in its current form, it would be, and as the Quilani case shows, the Constitutional Court will strike down this bill immediately. Therefore, it needs to be reconsidered in earnest. Legislation should not be applied to protect, and final thoughts on this, legislation should not be applied to protect people from speech or symbols that are merely offensive, because the spectrum of that which people may find offensive is almost endless. Debates over freedom of speech and freedom of expression are inherently controversial in nature, as the right to freedom of speech is entrenched to protect speech that some people or governments might find offensive, and speech which they may not like. If freedom of speech protected only speech that was popular and speech that everyone liked, it would not be necessary for the Constitution to protect it in the first place. Thank you very much for the opportunity, and that is the entirety of AfriForum's oral submission. Thank you, and have a nice day. If there are any questions, I will gladly answer them.
Thank you very much, Mr. Van Zyl. Honorable members, any questions or comments? Honorable Ngola.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Of course, let us thank the AfriForum for having taken effort to come and echo its views in the development of this bill. The presenter correctly makes mention of Section 16, subsection 2 of the Constitution, which says the right in subsection 1, which is the freedom of expression, does not extend to. We skip others, we go to paragraph C. Does not extend to advocacy of hatred that is based on race. Now, the question that I want to pose is very short like this, Chair. Do you consider racism as a crime, as a hate crime? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mwela. Any other questions or comments? Mr. Fanzi.
All right. To answer that question, as I understand the definition of a hate crime, if it is a crime committed against someone and that crime is also motivated by racial hatred, then of course racism would be a hate crime if it meets that criteria of, as I understand, a hate crime, a crime committed against another person or group that is motivated by racial hatred, then of course racism would be a hate crime.
Thank you very much, Mr. Tupre. Are you happy with the presentations?
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. I do not have any questions to raise at this stage. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mr. Van Zyl, for making an effort to enrich our legislative drafting. All comments or presentations will be taken into consideration when the bill is dealt with clause by clause. With that, members and people on the virtual platform and those who are watching us from home, we have come to the end of our public hearings, which started last term. So they stretched over 3 days. With full presentations of public hearings last term, and then we could not finish. We also had 2 days, that is yesterday and today. We have come to the end of the public hearings. We would like to thank all organizations that have made an effort to make representations or to make presentations before the committee. We assure them that all presentations made have made a very valuable input to our process, and they've enriched our process. We would start with the clause by clause when we come back from recess. We would be finalizing, the committee would be attempting to finalize the cannabis bill and the land court bill. This term before the 15th of June. And when we come back from recess in August, we will use that term to try and finalize or attempt to finalize this bill. Thank you very much, members. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.